Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Going for the Green Daily Fantasy Golf Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined for our British Open Championship preview by Colin Drew, as always. And then during the majors, normally we have Nelson Adcock come and join the show. You can subscribe to cutsweats.com. I got a promo code for you if you want to DM me for it. I'm not even going to tout it here, but I got it if you want to sign up to Cut Sweats. And we were just having a spirited debate off air that will continue, because Colin, this to me is the best golf tournament of the year. It's on right when you wake up. The finishing time is always amazing on Sunday. Like, you wake up, you get your coffee, you got some, like, you can just hang out and watch the end. Like, it is amazing. I love the Open Championship. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, definitely. I have like more nostalgia for the Masters, and I think the Masters is like an epic gambling setup too. It's always the first one. So definitely on Team Masters, but I do think that the Open Championship is always unique. It's for sure provided some epic moments, specifically from Jordan Spieth. But every year, you know, it seems like there's something unexpected that happens.
What about Henrik and Phil? That was an amazing one too.
Yeah. And you got the Vandeveld, and definitely some classic moments in golf. So I definitely look forward to it every year.
Nelson's probably a nerd. He probably doesn't like all the weather and everything that impacts this.
This is actually my favorite.
Oh, wow. Because
he's
your
a golfer too. He's not just a math nerd.
Because I was going to say, at heart, you really love golf. Yeah.
This is actually my favorite major.
Yeah. Because the first tournament I ever watched on TV where I was like, I'd like to do that. Like, I'd like to go out there and hack around like that. Like, it just looks like a good time, even though it's miserable.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every year this tournament always just like produces pretty fun event. I think it's because the variance, I think, gets ratcheted up at these things.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you hit it off the course a little bit and gets, you know, you get into some really high grass and get screwed, or you find yourself stuck in a bunker. So like the variance goes up quite a bit, which, although they still produce pretty good winners, so it's kind of a fun mix and match.
Yeah, and I think unlike the USGA setups, usually the whole field is in play. Like the US
it's
Open,
fair.
It's usually just ratcheted up for bombers, and the Open, you always get a mix of guys in there, which is definitely pretty interesting as well. And just some of the different types of shots you see played, I think, are always more unique at this type of course, like playing away from the hole to different spots, sometimes like aiming off the green to catch a run up. And so I like that stuff too.
Yeah. This was always the event I was like, you know, back in the low times of the Tiger Woods fan era, like 2014, 2015. I was like, if he ever is going to win another major, it's probably going to be the British, just because it really just gives everyone a chance. This doesn't just favor one person.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, that's kind of not how it's played at St. Andrews. St. Andrews has played really favorably to the bombers, but Troon, the one they played in Northern Ireland, where Rory made a quad on the first hole and then missed a 6-inch putt to miss the cut. Not that I'm bitter, or not that that was like the worst gambling experience of my life or anything. I barely even remember it, but like those courses tend to just be like, I mean, you are really rewarded for keeping it in play generally. But well, I mean, Nelson or Colin, what do you guys know about this course? Like, any specific angles for this course?
Yeah, I mean, it's a shorter course, par 70, just over 7,000 yards, I think 7,100. And I think that it is going to be a bit more, like a little bit more of an accuracy course. I do think it'll test like an all around test. It's expected to be 10 mile per hour winds up to 20 mile per hour gusts. So I think it'll be challenging. I'd lean slightly towards accuracy over distance. I don't think guys are necessarily just going to overpower the course. That's probably more of a thought with like the sleeper plays or the value selections rather than the top end guys in the world. I don't really see a big differentiator there. As far as the course fit, I would say if you're using our projections, which are powered by Data Golf, over at Daily Roto, the course history is baked in, and that's more of an Open Championship course history since from 2004 through 2019, rather than St. George specific. So a bit of a larger sample size, maybe captures a little bit more of which players do well in links golf, but that's how things are set up for the default projections that we have at Daily Roto.
Yeah. So let's just go ahead and get into it. if we are baking in course history stuff, Nelson, course fit, course history, stuff like that, what does that do to John Rahm's absurd projection? I mean, he is the highest projected guy by Data Golf by a massive amount. They are giving him 9% win equity. I saw that they have him as 0.52 strokes better per round than Xander, who they have as the second highest win equity. And I know that your stuff has similarly been in line with Data Golf on how good Rahm has been.
Yeah. Yeah. I think last time we were on for the PGA Championship, I said this is like one of the wider gaps between like the top and the, you know, the competitors that there had been in a while. I think it's only gotten a little bit wider because Rahm has just played really well since then. So yeah, I don't know what you're going to do with Rahm. He's just the most consistent best player in the world. And, you know, the fact that he's a Euro guy and has seen a lot of these courses, I think would only tend to, you know, help his case rather than, you know, Xander and the Americans not really having quite as much experience on link style courses might keep that gap pretty wide.
I think that's probably true. In my head, like, Colin, is this true? Like, I don't think of John Rahm as a European. Like, I just when I'm conceptualizing him, like, I don't place him in that bucket at all.
Well, he definitely, I mean, he's younger, right? So he hasn't spent as much time at the European Tour events as some of the other guys. And I guess, like, especially earlier, I mean, Rory kind of balanced both tours. Rahm definitely feels like he plays more on the US Tour than some of the younger European Tour players, if you're looking down that route. But his course history isn't exceptional at the Open Championships, but it's not going to be enough to shrink like a half stroke advantage on the rest of the field. So I think he is the favorite, and makes sense. It's just like he has to win or come close to it. There's a lot of really good value options this week. And so the argument against Rahm isn't so much that you don't think he's the favorite. It's just like 25% owned. He's got to win or at least top five the event. And there's good balance builds that you can build as well. So if Rahm doesn't win, if he comes in sixth, that's still like a great finish, but it's probably not going to be enough for DFS.
All right. Get your heresy on Rory out of the way, Nelson. Just do it. Just get it out of the way.
Look, I love Rory, but man, he stinks.
You don't. You really don't.
I took Rory versus Bryson last year for every round for a while. I thought Rory was the best player in the world, or not the best player in the world, but better than Bryson. But man, the guy has just kind of lost it a little bit. Although we saw a little bit of resurrection Wells Fargo, I guess, and then
He T7 the U.S. Open, and his PGA Championship result, as we were just talking about before the show, is not as bad as it looks because he made an absurd number because he just got, like, the course just owned him on one hole, and he took the high road instead of complaining like Bryson would have.
Yeah, and then he came over to prep for the Open Championship, and he finished 59th at the Irish Open and missed the cut at the Scottish Open. So
yeah, he's
just chilling. Like, he just is working on his game. He's like, he's not – at this point in his career, Rory is rich. He's got a family. He's got a lot of perspective on life, as we hear from him in these press conferences. Like, I don't think the adrenaline for the Scottish Open is there for him.
Maybe.
He said he found something.
But I don't know if it was there for Wells Fargo, you think it would be there in the prep and the lead up to the place that he's really looking to capture the magic. So I don't know. I mean, he's what, like, still a top 15 player in the world, but he's priced extremely premium and like second most expensive player on the slate. Really cripples builds. Rahm is obviously heavily favored.
8% owned. 8% owned Rory at an Open Championship. I mean, come on.
I just got 1% roars on the raw Skynet run. It's pretty good.
Yeah, nice.
It's not going to end well for you, bro. That's not going to be what you want.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There is value, I would say. Like, there's definitely, like, Sam Burns, Daniel Berger. Like, we'll get into that stuff later. There's definitely some really big value plays. And if you're going to jam chalk value, then I guess that's the story you're kind of selling yourself.
That's what makes it most interesting, is it's not like you have to roster him and then a bunch of $6,400 guys who are like dogs to make the cut. You can roster him, guys that the Data Golf projections really like, who are live for like T10s, and you're not going to have a roster combination that's like super, super common, because Rory is going to be so much less owned than all the other expensive guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it just feels like he's almost like 1500 or 2K overpriced, but I don't know. I mean, he is the strongest Open Championship player in the field. He definitely has excelled here in the past. He's played above even his own personal like lofty expectations at these. So if you wanted to boost him half a stroke or something for that, I mean, I guess that's the story you're really going with, is that the projections are kind of underweighing like his ability to kind of rise to the occasion, despite the fact that they're already getting boosted for major championship performances and course history.
All right, Nelson, the next group of dudes, Brooks, DJ, Xander. Xander is Data Golf's second favorite. Then you have your Brysons and your Spieth. Spieth is projected to be the highest owned golfer at this tournament. Where are you at with this next range of guys?
Yeah, I think Xander is, you know, decently above this whole group, actually. And that's obviously reflected in probably the ownership that we'll see. So then it's just, you know, it's kind of a toss up, I guess. DJ, you know, it's like, okay, when is this guy going to show up again? Because it's like when he's playing good, it's just, it looks so easy. And then I'm not exactly sure what's been going on. I'm trying to look. He's been actually putting pretty well. So he's just like not striking the ball that well. So it will be a little bit tricky. And JT played well at the Scottish over the weekend. So, you know, you might get some pump from him. I mean, you know, Bryson looks like he's going to be the leverage play here.
Yeah, I definitely think Bryson's going to be the guy that's not popular at all. You know, right now I've got Spieth is more popular than Xander. I think in some of the US betting markets, it's a pick 'em in the head to head. And you can even get Xander maybe at better odds than Spieth, some books. And so I think the casual person is going to, you know, they can click in both Xander and Spieth, and some people will definitely do that. I think if they were only clicking in one, the casual person in like the $10 is probably going to click Spieth's name. And a lot of the chatter this week is about the course and the creativity and, you know, Spieth's performances at the Open and in the past. And so all of that, I think Spieth will be more popular than Xander. I agree, Xander's probably the better play as you move up in stakes. So like, I think I have Xander 15% right now, but it's still hard to see him not being like 20 or 25 as you look at the, like, even like the $100 or the $500 contest.
You locking in the T2 for Louis, just another second place finish for Louis. I mean, theoretically, I mean, played a ton on the European tour, right? Like all the narratives fit for Louis. He's actually in good form right now, which does not always happen for him going into a major championship. Like when's the last time Louis withdrew with a back thing? I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. It seems like he's in good spirits, good health for sure. And I guess the concern is that a lot of his recent performance over the last 3 months has definitely been strong, but a lot of it's been carried with the putter. And if you look at kind of the top 20, 25 players in the field, Louis is easily kind of running the hottest with the putter. He's still gaining strokes tee to green. So it's not like a knock on him overall as a player, but I think he's, you know, if you look last 3 months, he's in this field, he's maybe like sixth overall, but he's third with the putter and he's only like 27th tee to green. So I think that's, I guess, the knock on Louis.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. He's the looks like the sun running captain right now, as far as I can
number
tell.
One
well, out of people in the field, is Kadira in this field?
I have no idea. I haven't got that deep in anything.
Okay, no, well, he's raw sun runner number 4, and the people in front of him are Satoshi, Labiota, and Chesson Hadley.
Yeah,
so unless one of those three is in the field, then Louis is the hottest putter in the field right now.
I'll probably be off of Louis just because there are great options up there. I think he's been playing well enough that looks like he's going to be reasonably popular. I'd prefer to play Morikawa at a discount, and the best tee to green player in the field, the best iron player in the field. And he's a discount in ownership, or take like a price discount down to Patrick Cantlay and Patrick Reed that are going to be similarly owned to Louis, but at least offer a price discount. And I think that's where I'm leaning as you get kind of past the JT, Spieth, Bryson range and go down into that like balanced tier.
Yeah. Louis looks like one of the largest discrepancies between me and Data Golf. So And it's probably just because I'm docking him so hard for sun running the putter.
I think you got to look into that harder. I mean, you got to come up with an algorithm that like undecays putting based on ownership. Like once a guy gets to 15%, it like really undecays. And then once a guy gets to 20%, you got to start to give him like boosts above the skill he's shown for putting. Like once a guy's 20%, you know, those 12 footers are going in. You just gotta accept it. Okay. big question we got to handle as we get to the Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Tyrrell Hatton range. Colin, should we be in, whether, you know, in our actual MME runs or just in our minds as we're hand building stuff, like how much are you boosting European tour players? Cause it does anecdotally feel like a Robert McIntyre shows up every year with a T3, you know, your Brendan Grace's, your Matt Wallace's, and Nelson, I'm sure is gonna, you know, push his glasses up his nose and tell me that this is not true. But anecdotally, it does feel like you see a lot of rando Euro Tour players perform above their baselines at these events.
It's a valid question. I always feel weird when you pull it up and you just see like USA flags like on the projections and the baselines, and then when you look at the leaderboard at the Open, it always feels like it's definitely littered with longer shots. And I know DataGolf has accounted for some of this, right? Because they are adjusting for Open championship history over the past 15 years, but they're not necessarily putting like a big boost towards European Tour players. I feel like that maybe is like a slight gap in the way they're looking at things. I don't think it really impacts things towards like the top end. Like you're still, we talk about Tyrrell Hatton like every major, but it definitely feels like in the value tier when you're talking about like Ryan Palmer versus somebody who plays a lot more links golf, like that's where it feels like it can come to fruition a bit more. And it's definitely something I'm struggling with a little bit, is how to kind of factor that in this week. And like Morikawa even came out and said that like the way that his irons felt on the turf was like discomforting to him, as he's been prepping for this event, and he doesn't feel like he's hitting the ball as well right now. And that's what he's been trying to practice this week. So, I mean, when you talk to the golfers, they talk about it. When you look at the data, it shows up. So I do think we need to adjust for it a bit.
Yes. I think it's just tough. I feel like at some point, you know, maybe early in DFS, people used to like never play Euro players. Mostly because they just didn't know about them. Now there's so much content out there. The thing that you run into is like you can't compare apples to oranges versus someone playing on the PGA Tour versus the Euro Tour. You know, just because someone finished a bunch of, you know, good finishes on the Euro Tour are good, but there is some skill gap to be had, and it's tough to determine whether the field is overweighing or underweighing that skill gap. That's the only tricky thing is, okay, They're gonna play Fitzpatrick for sure. I mean, he's gonna be the guy, I guess, that has the narrative going as being a Euro player and has good form coming in. So, you know, we're just getting down into this range. You know, in this range where we're at, you know, the 8,000s, you got a couple Euro names in here, but the guys are just not playing that well. Rose, Fleetwood, Lowry, you know, they've had really mediocre results recently.
Yeah, and I think at least early in the week, there's definitely a bunch of content that's boosting up some of these guys. Like people are pretty heavily touting like Brandon Grace and the value tier guys. But if you look at, I don't know, like Matt Wallace, for example, like he's going overlooked. He's 15% to T20 in DataGolf stuff, like 2% ownership. And if there is some type of boost there, maybe he's actually like 17 or 18% to T20, then that puts him in the same tier as like Ricky Fowler or Gary Woodland. And I think that's the type of thing I'm trying to look at, is like a couple percent here, there, not like, oh, Matt Wallace is from the UK, so he should be like 25% to T20 instead of 15%.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Matt Wallace quite a bit. I'm closer to 19 or 20 on him for T20.
All right. So Drewby, I know you really like Patrick Reed, I'm assuming, but I mean, he is coming in at, you know, like ownership I would not have expected. And then, you know, it's a major championship, so it means that Paul Casey is going to be overowned by the DFS nerds for sure.
Yeah, I like Reed and Cantlay. I think there's good value. I mean, if you're going to play Sam Burns in a lineup, you can fit in five players that you feel extremely good about and take the bit of a flyer on Sam Burns, who did well at the Scottish Open last week and is clearly underpriced for the field by, what, 600, if not 1,000. And so it's not like he's a lock to make the cut, but it does so much with roster flexibility. And Cantlay and Reed, yeah, 18 to 20% ownership's a lot, but we went through all these guys and like there are red flags on anybody who's single digits. Like with Rory, it's the price and his form. With Bryson, definitely big questions on course fit. I do think we probably like glossed over Bryson too much, because if we talk about like winning GPPs, like Bryson's definitely the GPP style player who easily could finish 50th or miss the cut, but he's usually playing to win and playing super aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, like Bryson at single digit ownership, I mean, is it a terrible course fit? Probably. Has Bryson shown it doesn't really matter and he'll just overpower whatever course? Yes. Is Bryson going to throw a gigantic fit if the wind draw doesn't go his way? Probably. But I mean, if the argument for Rory is the same as it would be for Bryson, which is just he's one of the 10, 15 best players in the world. And if you can get that guy at half the ownership of other players who are similar skill level over four rounds of a golf tournament, probably, you know, a fairly good idea. Zalatoris, really low ownership projection early. Do we think he's crafty enough, Nelson? Can he do what he did at the Masters here?
I'll be low on Will, I think, you know, probably doesn't have a
little bit.
Yeah, he hasn't really played that well recently. He's priced, you know, way up. I don't know what he was at the Masters, but I can't imagine it was 8,500. So yeah, that, you know, probably doesn't have that much experience. I mean, he's young. What is he, like 21 or 22? Probably doesn't even have that much experience playing across the pond. So yeah, probably not going to be heavy on Willie Z this week, although I am a big fan.
Yeah. Okay.
I think like these, you know, the British Open, I mean, you know, other than St. Andrews, where it's wide open, people just can just bomb it, you know, might not be a great fit for him if this isn't a bomber's course.
Yeah. So this next range of guys, I'm probably most interested in Scottie Scheffler. You know, I guess I don't know if I have a real opinion on course fit. I mean, he's decent enough, you know, around the greens or whatever, but like, I just feel 8,200 when he's like, you know, kind of the same price range as Scott and Fleetwood, you know, I think he's interesting. And then Justin Rose, who we've talked about a ton doing these, like, I mean, this does 6% own Justin Rose. It feels like a spot where I'm ready to lose some money on that.
Yeah. Scheffler, I feel like he's, when I pulled up the thing, like Fitzpatrick, I was like, okay, Fitzpatrick at an open definitely sets up. And to me, Scheffler felt like the opposite of that, like, felt like a guy that is usually playing better at the longer courses, definitely not as good around the green, not quite as good on approach. I don't like particularly view him as a creative player, but I have no real basis for that. And so I was probably off of Scheffler. I think Fitzpatrick's going to be popular, but appropriately so. And then if pivoting, these are like small pivots, but Finau I'd prefer over Scheffler. They're basically the same ownership and similar projections, but I'd prefer Finau's upside. And Webb Simpson is going to be single digits. And he's definitely been off a bit, but he's the type of player that I would usually try to target on these like more medium length courses. And it seems like he's a guy that could bring some differentiation to your lineup. I prefer him over Justin Rose, even though he's American.
Rose has to get the Euro bump though, right?
A bit. He's just been like bad. Like he's been pretty bad other than the heater with the putter at the Masters. He just generally hasn't been playing that well.
It's been bad. Yeah. The only thing about Scheffler will be interesting to see just how much people are going to let the Scottish results impact their ownership, because he played really well there.
There you go. I'm all in. He's already shown he can do it, bud.
I mean, I would just expect like anyone that played pretty well at the Scottish gets like a little extra boost. Player. Well, just, yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, well, okay. You're going to get like a little extra boost, I feel like.
Yeah.
Mandatory like 20% Matthew Fitzpatrick week, Colin.
Oh, I mean, like he's definitely one of those guys that's getting the boost. He's obviously from the UK. He plays enough on the PGA Tour that people are familiar with him. When you talk about like a craftier course that's medium length and not like a long course, that brings Fitz into play, and his baselines on David Golf are high. So I'm certainly not clicking the X button on Fitzpatrick. I think he's appropriately popular. I expect him to be like one of the five highest owned players in the slate. Yeah. And he finished second last week at the Scottish Open. So,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, and this is where guys start to really run together, except for the very obvious value plays, right? Like, you know, you start to look at guys like, you know, Leishman. I guess Neiman is receiving like a really strong projection. Abraham Answer is receiving a really strong projection. I don't know if those guys necessarily strike me as like open championship style players. I would be thinking more like 4% on Jason Day. I could probably get into here.
Did anyone say Adam Scott? What is going on with that guy?
He's not good anymore, right?
Could you imagine like 5 years ago, someone just would tell you like Adam Scott just is horrible at golf now, and you're like, what is going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, the same thing with Justin Rose, right? Just like put those guys together, Davis. I feel like it's disingenuous that you could be into Rose but not into Adam Scott.
I mean, this guy, this is crazy.
Adam Scott is Australian, dude. Justin Rose is English. You're not understanding the corollary here, Colin.
I do actually.
So the Justin Rose thing, to be like a little bit more into it, it's like Rose has his best results have come in majors this year, which maybe says something about like his game fits hard, maybe harder golf courses. He did really well at the Masters and at the PGA Championship. And I mean, he's played a bunch of links golf in his life. That's the thesis for the Rose play.
Do we know that the course is going to play difficult?
It's all related to the weather. It's all weather related. I think like most links courses, if it's 70 and balmy, these dudes are going to be just firing at pins because there's nothing the course can do to stop it.
Yeah, the wind is a big defense, that's for sure.
I think,
but it's supposed to be kind of windy, like, though, right?
20 under, like the winning score at the Scottish Open, I think was like 20 under. I don't have it right in front of me, but I don't know if this ends up. It's definitely not a long course. It should be more challenging, but if it ends up like a 16 under winning score, which we have seen at Open Championships in the past, then. Like I like Neiman more in that type of environment than I do if it's like a 6 under winning score. And yeah, the wind gusts are up to 20 right now, but sustained winds 10 miles per hour. It doesn't seem like it's insane. We're not looking at like 30 to 40 mile per hours unless things change in the next little bit.
Oh my God. What about this as an angle, Colin? Play it like it's not going to be windy and it's just going to chill and play all the aggro American dudes, like play Bryson, play Corey Connors, like play all the guys who would obviously have like some trouble with the wind, and just be like, or even like positively boost them in your MME runs. Like, you know, like, a, you know, if Bryson, then like a greater chance of like Connors or those guys making it in your lineup. That is as galaxy brain as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, there is probably some subtle stuff with course fit that you could do like that. I wouldn't be able to accomplish it in an optimizer, but if you're hand building, and I mean, the course fit that we're using is fairly neutral right now compared to other courses. If you look at the decomposition of how the projections are built, you kind of have, you know, guys getting at most like 0.07 of a stroke boost and not getting docked very much more than that. So you could do a little bit of that if you wanted to, with like a hand build where you're trying to pair Bryson with like a longer value play or something like that.
So Nelson, the super chalk guys in this range, there are two guys who are like just absurd values, and that is Harris English, 7,300, Daniel Berger, 7,400. What are you doing with them? Are you going to try and get over? Do either of them strike you as a good fade? Like, where are you thinking with these two guys?
Like, I mean, they're just both horribly priced. So you just have to be careful on, probably can't play them together. But other than that, you got to be careful who you mix them up with.
Yeah. I like Berger over English. Like, over the last 3 months, Berger is 18th in this field. Tee to green, English is 36th. English is
18th with the putter. I like Berger much more.
I was wondering if English is sun running a bit. Like long term, he definitely doesn't feel like a top 20 putter in the world, and that's where his results have been coming from. Figure maybe he was a neutral guy. If not, slight.
Harris is not that sun running. He's actually, I have him as like pretty good baseline putter, like one of the best. Fair. I had it, but that's just like it's hard to guess. It's just it's really a total guess. To do the baseline, I take like a longer term view of their putting. He's pretty good long term, it looks like. But he's been kind of good, you know.
Yeah, I mean anyone who watched that playoff can confirm that English was not sun running with the putter. I watched that dude miss I think 7 consecutive 8-footers in that playoff.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean they're brutal. Yeah. That's the right. They're both good. I like Berger. I've probably been overweight Berger for like the whole year. I feel like just like he just keeps getting priced down other than that, whatever.
So also this would be the range that if you were looking to just be like, I don't care about anything, but playing game theory with like semi-justifiable angles, this is where you get into European guys who are projected much worse than their other salary counterparts. So that's like, you know, Christian Bezenwiet, no idea if that's close. Nelson's probably going to laugh at my, he laughed at my Villegas pronunciation.
Villegas is a great one.
Yeah. But I mean, Poulter, Matt Wallace, Alex Noren, Martin Keimer, Danny Willett, like Robert McIntyre. There are an unlimited between like 7,000 and 7,500. It's like an unlimited amount of decent European tour or European level, like European nationality grinders who are sub 5% projected owned if you were looking to start taking stands.
Yeah, this is Drewby has Detry for zero, but he's going to get pretty good boost. He lost in a playoff at the Scottish. So like, he's one of the guys that are just going to be like, okay, you know, he might take away from Brendan Grace a little bit. You know, all these zero guys, they're pretty similar all down here. So your best strategy down here is just mix and match whichever guys you think are going to be fairly low owned.
Yeah. What do you have any big takes in this region, Colin? Like anyone that you're looking to get off of English and Berger for?
Well, I'll probably get off of English for Berger, which means English will be the guy that the chalk that comes through. But I think the way I've been trying to look at it is trying to quantify like what the difference is. And it seems like these like established European Tour players who've been playing in the Open Championship for quite some time, like the Ian Poulters of the world, they're getting like a tenth of a stroke boost based on the course history. And most of the flags, so to speak, like do better at the Open Championship. And so maybe the guys that I kind of deem to be the European Tour players, maybe if I boost them like a tenth of a stroke, then I can kind of adjust projections that way a little bit and might bring them up like 5 spots or something, which is at least enough to make them competitive with this range, and then try to grab the lower owned of those guys. So looking like sub 5% if possible, which like Matt Wallace did check the box for that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like we haven't even covered, you know, half the names. You got Bernd Wiesberger, you got Guido, you got Victor Perez, you got, you know, like all of these dudes. Yeah, EVR, you got Richard Bland, like Lucas Herbert. Like, I know he's French and that's not how you say his last name. But like literally, I mean, there are 40 dudes you could be throwing darts at down here who meet this criteria. And I don't know, like if you have a read or if you have like some data that points you in their direction, like, I don't know, it feels like probably these are good stabs to take at a weird event, like not a weird event, but just an event that, as Nelson said, it's going to lead to more like randomized outcomes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just tricky. You have like, you have all these Euro guys down here, but then you have like Brian Harman. Okay. Like you're going to put the, like, if you just like do a one versus one comparison, you'd be like, okay, Brian Harman's probably better than, you know, this guy week in and week out, you know? So it is tricky to just throw the dart and find the right one.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And like this year, at least now, they're looking like you know, these guys in the past were always 1%. There still are some 1%, but the better plays here, like 5 or 6%. So the market's baking it in a little bit.
Yeah. Any other cheap dudes to tout before we talk about bets?
Well, I mean, we did talk briefly about it, but Sam Burns is pretty insanely priced in this field. The last 3 months, he's 15th in the field, tee to green. And like, he had a good showing at the Scottish Open last week as well. He's definitely had some volatility, and I would say he's probably a fairly volatile golfer, but comes in with 2 top 20s. You know, he won at the Valspar earlier, has a top five at the Genesis, and the AT&T Byron Nelson. And he's extremely cheap. So if he's like 60, 65% to make the cut at close to the minimum price, it just does so much flexibility for your roster. I'm having a hard time deciding like how popular he'll be. I feel like 6.5% is probably too low, but I can't tell if he'll get to like 20 or if he'll just stay in like the 10.
Low teens, probably, if I had to guess. For old Sammy Burns, I mean, he's just in like a complete wasteland down here. I don't know. Do they like misclicked his price? If I had to guess, I mean, you got like Carlos Ortiz down here, Chris Kirk, but other than that, like the Euro guys down here are really kind of dicey once you get down in this range.
Yeah. No, I mean, you are right, but like, I don't know. I just know I'm tuning in. I'm waking up on Saturday morning at 4:30 a.m. and Romain Langasque is going to be like hitting an eagle putt to move into T12 or something. Like, I can acknowledge that, you know, Brian Harman and Sam Burns and all these guys have these really attractive prices. And then at the same time, I don't know. That's why this event is so fascinating, really, in general. And we haven't even talked about the wave split stuff, which is, there is going to be a wave split probably that happens if the weather does pick up, but it's going to be very hard to predict, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, if you below Sam Burns, there's like 2 or 3 options I could see, like even think about rostering. Veerman is pretty good down here. He's like 100 above the Stone Min. So is Burmester. Dean Burmester is, you know, these are guys that I play on the Euro Tour all the time. And Scrivener. Those would be the guys that I would, you know, if you really want to throw a dart at a Euro guy for super cheap and just load the top side, those would be 3 pretty good dart throws.
Yeah.
Other thing I'd say to watch out for this week is just withdrawals. It's 1:30 lock, so you got to adjust your schedule a little bit. There have been some COVID withdrawals already because they're a bit stricter with the protocols, and so some guys didn't travel over because of that. So like when you're looking through the field, Hideki is out, Sungjae is out, Matthew Wolf is out, Bubba Watson is out, Zach Johnson is out, Kevin Na is out. So Siwoo out. Some of that is not COVID, some of that's like Olympic prep for the South Koreans, but there's been a lot of field changes, kind of more so than we'd typically see before a major.
I Googled the scores here. Looks like -5 last time when Darren Clark won, -1 when old Ben Curtis won 18 years ago, 13 under when Greg Norman won in 93, but then everything else is +2, -4, -5 going back 50 years. They only play this course every 10 or 15 years. So
brand new game.
You know, I would expect golf. I think I saw someone say like maybe like -8-ish winning score, so I would expect it to be decently difficult depending on the wind.
That's another reason to play Sam Burns then, because it lets you fit in top guys with win equity when that stuff matters more. Yeah. And he's the type of player that if he does make the cut will probably outscore, like if he finished 50th maybe he'll finish 30th or something in fantasy scoring.
Yeah, I think the harder it plays, the more stars and scrubs becomes much more viable, for sure.
Yeah. All right, Nelson, you got anyone as bettable, or is NitNet spitting out that every number posted on every sports book is completely unbettable and unavailable?
No, let's see. Like, you know, the guys that I like over them that I seem to be stronger than the market are long shots, Berger, Griffin, Gooch. I like Webb, Corey Connors too. Corey Connors like crapped the bed in round one at the Scottish and then almost heroed his way into the cut line. with a 500 bogey free round in round two, but came up one stroke short. So those would be like, those are the guys that I'm higher than on them. I mean, there's a couple of more, but those are the top guys.
I bet Patrick Cantlay 33-1, Patrick Reed 33-1, and Webb Simpson 65-1.
Yeah, I like Webb the most probably out of those three.
Yeah. So I've bet a couple guys already. I mean, obviously I did. I bet Xander. I got him at 18. Cantlay 25. Rose and Scheffler at 50. And then my dude Skyler's guy Guido at 125-1. But he did actually make this interesting point to me. Skyler did, which is, I mean, when Darren Clark won this event, he was like 150-1 or something. But just in general, if you are gonna bet any major championship deeper dudes, this would be the one to do it, because it is the one that has given us winners from way deeper down the board. Though I guess maybe that's off the list forever, because Phil won the PGA Championship at like 450-1 or whatever.
What was the what was the Guido price?
150-1. Hmm. You probably have him as like 900-1.
Like 200.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think it's like not great, but whatever.
You gotta play, dude. You gotta play the Italian narrative with Guido, with Francesco, because Italy just won the European Championship. They've been drinking good red wine. They're on top right now. Actually, and all the English dudes are bummed out. They're like contemplating their own mortality after watching their team lose on penalty kicks. They're all miserable.
You're saying the English guys are gonna be even sadder than they generally are?
Yes,
he's calling the loss in the playoff the heart-wrenching loss for Rory McIlroy in the playoff.
Rory is Northern Irish, dude. He doesn't care. His team didn't even make the championships. All right, and then one and done. I mean, I'm using Rory, obviously. Been saving him for this all year. Not that anyone should be following my one and done picks. We've circled the wagons. We're waiting for next season over in Camp Matic.
Yeah, I think I got coffined last week with Kevin Stroom and MC. That was a good time.
Tough scene.
So, no good.
Colin?
One and done pick. I got to figure out who I got left. Give me a few seconds here, because I've burned through a bunch of the good players. Rory is the best player I have available. I got JT available as well. So, I'll probably go with JT between those two.
Yeah. All right, everyone. DailyRoto.com. Got the optimizer, got all the projections you need, getting ready. We'll have owner. I assume Colin will update ownerships one more time before tomorrow. Just get excited for a great week of golf. It's going to be phenomenal. I'm super excited for it. And we'll be back next week.